Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is Wrestling Night in America for October 15th, 2023. Happy to have you along with us. This is a show where we talk about the big shows in pro wrestling, and we'll touch on next week's Bound for Glory, Impact's one of their marquee pay-per-view events of the year. We'll talk about that card. We'll also talk extensively about the Tuesday night battle that raged on this past Tuesday between NXT and AEW. And we'll also give some thoughts on last weekend's Fastlane event. I want to thank Nate Lindberg and Brandon LeClaire, who took over for me last weekend while I was out of town, and talked about Fastlane on Saturday night. So I appreciate that. We are back here on Sunday night, as we are each and every weekend, unless there is a premium live event or a pay-per-view that takes place on Saturday night, then we do our best to be on the air after that show goes off the air, taking your phone calls and emails about that show. And you are the engine that drives this show, so we want to hear from you. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can direct your emails. So we'd love to hear from you. We got a couple emails ready to go, but before we get to that and all the other stuff we're talking about tonight, I want to bring on my co-host, a longtime collaborator of mine here on The Torch. He is PWTorch.com contributor John Mazzera. John, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me. It's been a minute, but it's always good to get back on the show.
Absolutely. Always good to have you. Always good to discuss wrestling with you. So I want to start with Tuesday night, and that was the NXT versus AEW battle. Both companies loaded up those shows. AEW advertised their Tuesday night Dynamite as Title Tuesday. Tons of titles on the line. A couple of them even changed hands. NXT had John Cena. They had Paul Heyman. They had The Undertaker on the show. So it was reflected as such in the ratings. NXT ended up winning the ratings battle, 921,000 overall viewers to AEW's 609,000 overall viewers. The 18 to 49 key demographic rating was a little closer. NXT had a 0.30, AEW at a 0.26. John, just from the ratings, did the numbers when they came out on Wednesday surprise you at all?
Not too much. No, I guess if I had to have placed a wager, I would have had NXT winning, but by probably a narrower margin, just because NXT had, you know, grown in the ratings recently with some smart use of main roster, Becky Lynch, Dominic Mysterio, et cetera, you know, to give a little bit of a boost. And I don't remember for sure, but it seems like maybe the Dynamite ratings recently have been down a tad. So being on a different night than usual is never good. I think it's, you know, a legitimate excuse. there are some excuses you roll your eyes at, but I do think that's a legitimate excuse. And when you listed the wrestlers, I mean, they never specifically said Undertaker, but, you know, with the gong on the preview commercial that they played multiple times the night before on Monday Night Raw, you kind of had to have your head in the sand if you didn't expect him to be there. So it doesn't surprise me too much, and it's kind of funny that it's kind of what should really be a non-story has turned into such a story because of the social media and all the reactions and the tribalism that followed amongst, you know, Tony Khan initially and then responses to him and other people just mudslinging and everything else. It's kind of funny where it's just like, okay, move on, you know, but it gives us something to talk about.
Yeah, and I do wonder if there would be so much attention paid to this battle if both companies didn't treat it like an act of war. You know what
right.
I'm saying? It's
yeah.
If NXT had just gone about their business and put on a normal show, if AEW had put on a normal Dynamite, if Tony Khan had stayed off of social media, you really wonder. I mean, obviously fans would be interested because they haven't been head-to-head since NXT moved off of Wednesday nights. But so there would be – naturally there would be some interest. But I don't think the interest would have been as heightened as it was had both companies not reacted the way they did and loaded up their shows the way they did. And I do agree with you. I thought NXT would win. You know, it is their home night, so they have that home field advantage. Plus, they've been trending upward, as you mentioned, in the ratings. And so, you know, add in all the special guest stars, and there's bound to be a lot more interest even above and beyond what they had been doing. But I am surprised it was not as close as I thought it would be. I thought it would be a lot, maybe not a lot, but I thought it would be closer in overall viewership than it was. So, I'm kind of right there with you. Now, which show do you think was actually better from a quality standpoint?
Oh, probably Dynamite, but I think that most weeks, if not all weeks.
Yeah.
Not that I'm a huge, you know, Dynamite booster, but I'm also not too high on NXT right now, but I'm not super down on it either. But generally most weeks I think Dynamite puts on a better show. And I think that this week with the strength of some of the in-ring work in particular, what was it? Was it Swerve and Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson, excuse me, was a, you know, particularly strong match. And there were some other good matches on Dynamite. NXT was kind of your typical NXT, but with guest stars. It's not like the LA Knight being a guest referee really added much to the match. It was just him being there. So, I mean, and you can, it's kind of cool to see Undertaker or a little nostalgia, this or that, but that doesn't necessarily make it a better experience, you know, or a better viewing experience. So I would give the nod to Dynamite being better this week.
I think it was close. I went and looked at the shows almost minute by minute for my upcoming Torch column. And when I got done and you kind of put the Word documents of each side by side, you can see that there was a lot more going on the NXT show. It was a lot more moving from one thing to the next. And so it had a lot more happening, which does not always equate to a better show, but you know, if you're a viewer flipping back and forth between the shows, you might be more attracted to NXT's pace on that evening than you were to AEW's. And I do think, too, if you're someone sampling the shows, the AEW show is more indicative of what that show is on a week-to-week basis. Yes, there were more title matches than they usually have, but that was really the only difference. And Dynamite does have the occasional title match, so it's not something completely out of the ordinary. Whereas NXT was just, that was not the kind of NXT show that you're going to get week-to-week. You know, you're not going to get Asuka wrestling every week. They've done more peppering of main roster stars like Dominic on the show, but not to the level and not to the extent that they did on Tuesday. So, you know, if you were drawn in by NXT and you thought it was fantastic this week and you want to tune in next week, you might be disappointed because that's not the show that you're going to get next week. So I do wonder the increase, couple hundred thousand in NXT viewers this week, how many of them are going to sample the product again next week and truly stick around or not based on what they see in the follow-up versus AEW? You know, I'm not sure how many people sampled the product Tuesday night that don't sample it on Wednesday. Maybe an NXT viewer who only watches NXT, you know, maybe they were drawn to this competition and checked out AEW on commercial breaks or what have you. But that was, if you were intrigued by what you saw on Dynamite Tuesday night and wanted to tune in next Wednesday to see it, that's more the kind of product you can expect on a week-to-week basis than what you saw in NXT. And I'm not sure if that's going to have any impact on viewers, but just, you know, kind of an observation for me.
Yeah, it'll be real interesting to see where everything lands after this week with the follow-ups and, you know, do people, like you said, did people stick around who sampled NXT maybe for the first time in a while because of all the star power? They know the star power is not going to be there next week. So did they do enough to hook them? And if so, are they disappointed? Because if, you know, there are certain acts on NXT I'm just not, you know, fond of, and they do nothing for me, and I tend to fast forward through them. So, you know, and I think those acts weren't as prevalent on this week's show. I'm like, Schism is one. I call them the lamer Dark Order. They just don't do anything for me, and I know half the group is out of the company now, so what happens to the remaining ones? But you know, when you have some of those things, or what they did a few weeks ago when they were building up to a multi-tag team title match and they were just all like having dinner together, and it was just, to me, very goofy, very stupid. I don't think there was as much of that this past week, but if you return to that and that tone that turns off some viewers, you know, you might get some definite disappointed people tuning in based on what they saw last week.
So as much as the competition between these two groups was the story going in, the story coming out was not Hikaru Shida winning the AEW Women's Championship, was not Orange Cassidy winning the TNT Championship. It was the angle between MJF and Juice Robinson. A lot of pushback from fans on social media to that angle, where Juice Robinson displayed a roll of quarters that had MJF's last name on them, as a play on the anti-Semitic insults that MJF has faced in his life, not only in real life, but also his character, because he has brought that to the fore, and he has talked about that multiple times on AEW television. So, John, just your thoughts on that angle, and there was no follow-up on Collision when we had Juice Robinson facing Christopher Daniels. The focus was on the Dynamite Diamond Ring. Nothing was really said about the roll of quarters, so one assumes that they've dropped that angle, but your kind of impression of that, not only in the context of AEW, but in the context of, you know, the world we're living in today. And I think that's what really bothered a lot of people, is the tastelessness or just the tone deafness of doing that the same week that the attack by Hamas on Israel occurred on Saturday. So just your overall impressions of that angle.
Yeah, it's not a good look. And I will say, I was like you, I was out of town last week, so I try to avoid spoilers, but I was, you know, I was a few days behind. So I had heard kind of what had happened without seeing it. So I can't comment in a way of like watching it live. You know what I mean? Like, and and seeing it unfold without knowing what was going to come. So my viewing is obscured by just knowing the controversy ahead of time. So I just want to kind of throw that out front. But yeah, I think a lot of people have defended it in a few ways. One, by saying, well, you know, Juice always uses a roll of quarters, like that's his loaded weapon, but that's a bad excuse. And I think that, you know, the timing and everything makes it worse. That doesn't mean it would have been okay the week before, but yeah, the timing definitely makes it worse. And I think another thing that excuse people have used is, well, he's a heel, and he'll say dastardly things. And, you know, I get that argument, but at the same time, wrestling isn't – I'm trying to think of a good example, but pick the best TV dramas on HBO or like the real good channels. Like, but there are good writers out there who can bring heavy subjects with nuance and can make points, political points, social points. That's not traditionally professional wrestling, which has a history of xenophobia, has a history of racism, has a history of very, very over-the-top ethnic stereotype characters, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't, and I may be clouding my judgment based on a history of WWE and not AEW, but I don't trust a wrestling program to handle a situation where they're trying to use anti-Semitism as a story plot point. Now, it's one thing with MJF, as you pointed out. If he's going to talk and tell stories, even that's a little iffy because it's like, man, you're using stuff to try to get cheap applause. I don't like seeing wrestlers do Eddie Guerrero's shimmy before doing a frog splash because I'm like, you're just exploiting a dead man to get a cheap pop. That's my opinion. You know, so it's like, you're using your history and a history of just terrible, terrible history of anti-Semitism worldwide to try to maybe get sympathy on a character or to try to get heat on a character. I just feel that's not what I want to see in wrestling, even if you can defend it by saying, well, but MJF's going to beat him up and get revenge and put that dastardly guy in his place. I feel like, okay, but then what happens next? I mean, you just have Juice Robinson, the anti-Semite, hanging out with Jay White, you know, it going forward. It's just, it's a bad look. And I think, as I said, I think it was probably a bad look regardless. And then once you throw in the world, very, very real situation happening less than a week before and continuing, it wasn't just like one event, but the continuing problems in Israel, the warring, the fighting, the violence, et cetera, it just should have been scrapped. Like if they had approved it last week, the week before, by a week later, somebody should have said, you know what, we're not going to do that. So that's pretty much where I am at with all of that.
MJF came out on social media to sort of defend it. You know, I think it's pretty clear that he has a lot of say and a lot of sway in his own storylines, and he's given a lot of leeway by Tony Khan in, you know, a lot of what we see, I think, from MJF on screen comes from the mind of MJF.
Sure.
And so he kind of defended what he was saying, saying, you know, the catharsis for the Jewish people to, you know, will be to see him get that comeuppance on Juice Robinson, which you sort of talked about. Do you buy that at all? Is that, does it land any softer for you after seeing MJF's or reading MJF's side of things about it?
Not really. I mean, obviously every ethnic group, every religious group are not monoliths, right? You're never going to find every member of a group who's going to agree on something. So there's undoubtedly going to be people who look at this and say, hey, I'm fine. And MJF says, hey, I'm fine. This was my idea. But MJF obviously doesn't speak for the entire, you know, Jewish community. And again, yeah, maybe Juice gets his comeuppance, but again, what happens next? And he's kind of a goof of a character, right? I mean, he carries around a cardboard cutout of Jay White, even if Jay White's also there in person. He talks funny. He looks kind of dresses funny. He's got the goofy beard. I mean, he's kind of a goof. So you've got this character, and now you're adding this kind of element to it. And again, they could say, well, he's not really an anti-Semite. He's just doing these things to get under MJF's skin or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but you're still playing into it in a way that's very cringy and very just uncomfortable, I think, to watch. And hey, I don't know. I'm not Jewish. I can't speak for the Jews any more than anyone. I certainly shouldn't speak for them.
That's kind of the thing that I was going to say, too. You know, like, I feel kind of weird as someone who's not Jewish telling a Jewish person what parts of their religion and their, you know, the stereotypes that they've had to live with they can and cannot exploit. Like that, you know, so that's why I don't go too hard at it because I don't know if I'm all that comfortable, you know, criticizing it because I'm uncomfortable with it. Maybe I'm supposed to be uncomfortable with it. Like maybe it's that confronting of the stereotypes is the whole point. Maybe that's, you know, it's a lot deeper certainly than we're used to pro wrestling storylines going. So, you know, to me there is that level of it as well where I'm like, geez, you know, I'm not Jewish. Who am I to say to this person who is what parts of their life experience they as a Jewish person they can and cannot use on television. So, you know, that, and I will say also, our Torch editor, Wade Keller, had a great breakdown on pwtorch.com of why he did not like that angle. And so if you have not read that yet, I would encourage you to, once you're done listening to this podcast, don't do it right now. Once you're done listening to us jabber on, then you go to pwtorch.com and check out Wade's editorial. I think he echoed a lot of things that I thought about it, and as usual, he put it a lot more eloquently than I ever could. So that'll be the last thing I say on it. There was something else to come out this week that is probably not as important, but Tony Khan on Twitter, he was all over social media to the point where fans and, you know, if you believe the reports, people within WWE and AEW were encouraging him to put his phone down. You know, and I don't know, you know, some people kind of laughed and thought, you know, he's having a breakdown in relation to AEW losing so badly to NXT. He made sort of a half-joking post about the only time that a show that was it Cena and Undertaker and Michaels were on was below a million viewers or something like that. And, you know, what did you think? I mean, is this Tony Khan playing a bit here where he's just kind of drawing in all the crazies and trying to maybe deflect attention from the MJF Juice Robinson angle onto himself? Or do you think like he's legit upset and is kind of losing it a little bit, at least on his social media personality?
I mean, obviously I don't know the man. He's 3 years younger than me, so close to my age, and actually learned this week he's exactly 3 years younger than me. We share a birthday, which was actually the same night as the NXT Dynamite Battle last Tuesday. That was his birthday, so that might have helped throw him over the edge, too, that his birthday, his side lost by as much as it did. But my just reading has always been that he just takes it too seriously. Obviously, it's a multi-million dollar corporation. You have to take it seriously. And it's his baby. You have to take it seriously. But the social media stuff, I don't think he's playing a bit. Like, I think he's playing to his base. Because, yes, I was critical. A lot of people were critical. But I also, every tweet, you look down and you see a lot of people, AEW, the AEW diehards, were going along for the ride with all those tweets. And, yeah, you tell them, you know, yeah, that's so hilarious that, you know, they only had, you know, they had under a million people. And you're like, yeah, but Edge just headlined a show with 600,000 people. When has Edge ever headlined a show with, you know, you're just, and I tend to agree, just in general, like, the social media can be a great tool for promotion, for getting, you know, opinions out and this and that, but it can also be just overused and a crutch, and I think far too often, it's like, especially when you're a public persona, and I'm not, so I can't speak to it. I don't have to deal with what they deal with. Thank God. But
don't sell yourself too short, John. You're pretty public. You're a social media maven. You're on pwtorch.com with your hits and misses.
Yeah.
You're on this show.
That is true. To a certain extent, I have a wee bit of notoriety, but and I have gotten hate mail and I have gotten hate tweets, but we don't need to talk about that right now.
You've officially made it then.
That is right. I ticked off some Matt Morgan fans about 10 years ago. Anyways, you can't respond to everybody, and I feel like he's one of those people who might feel the need to respond to every critic in every bad post and every bad tweet. And it's like, like somebody tweeted something about that and he's like, well, look what Vince McMahon used to do. It's like, well, okay, yeah. And Vince McMahon's a terrible person and we criticize a lot about what Vince McMahon has done over the years. Like, so don't do the whataboutism. So yeah, it's not a good look, and you're the head of a company. You're a head of a major company that has a lot of fans and has done a lot of good. There's a lot to like about AEW. I don't want to sit here feeling bad watching their programming the way I have many times because of bad business practices with WWE. And there's been things in the build-up to the first, pay-per-view, the first Double or Nothing 4 years ago. It was like, oh, look what they're doing. They have a transgender woman on the roster. That's cool. They have, they're trying to be more diverse. They're trying to do this. The work they've done with, autism for the fans at the arenas, it has been copied by other people. It's awesome. There's a lot to celebrate. But then you just act like a petulant child. He's 41 years old. Grow up. It's like, put the phone down. Get a PR firm to do your tweeting for you for promoting, because it's important. But don't feel like you have to just, do all this responding and, all this stuff. Just act like an adult at some point. Vince McMahon never grew up. Well, hopefully Tony Khan does. And
yeah. I kind of see his tweeting the same way that I see Donald Trump when he was president and when he was candidate Trump tweeting. It's the diehards who love AEW love what he's doing. They love
right.
that he's clapping back at all these, WWE lovers. They love that the guy who, he represents them, so the AEW diehards love it. And that's really who he's – the audience that he's playing for. Whereas everybody else, WWE fans, they'll say, oh, my God, look at what this guy tweeted today. But you also have the AEW fans who are not maybe enamored with Tony Khan. Maybe they like him. They like AEW. They're casual AEW fans. And they may be people who even watch every week. But they might look at that and say, that's not a great look. Just the same way that, Trump would go after, the Democrats would be aghast and they'd be, look what this guy tweeted. Even the Republicans who weren't super MAGA would be like, oh boy, maybe he should put the phone down. Just kind of like the casual AEW fans, So I'm sure that he would probably not love that comparison. But that's kind of how I see it. That's kind of just the reaction from the different groups seems to mirror when Trump was on Twitter and he was tweeting.
Yeah, I think it's a fair comparison, yeah.
All right, just a reminder, you can call us up, 515-605-9345, if you want to talk NXT versus AEW, Fastlane, or Bound for Glory. And you can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. John, we're going to go to our first email of the evening. This is from someone also named John, but he wins because he has an H in his name.
No,
so he has more letters.
He has an H in his name.
He has more letters. I don't make the rules, John. He has more letters in his name, so he wins. I'm sorry. Anyway, this is our friend John. He says, hi, Greg and co-host. Hope you're both doing well. With John Cena practically returning to being full-time in WWE for a couple months or so and essentially substituting for Roman Reigns, it got me to thinking. If starting your own national wrestling promotion, who would you pick as your top guy if you could only pick one? For the record, I'd pick Cena, and that's a fairly easy decision for a couple of reasons. But I'm going to be objective, as both men are very talented performers with their own strengths and weaknesses. Firstly, while Roman has been terrific since the Bloodline storyline began in 2020, he was floundering as a singles babyface for around 5 years straight. He also showed no/very little signs of improvement during this time and has been Vince McMahon/WWE's chosen one from day one. None of this was really the case with Cena. Say what you will about Cena, he has displayed flaws, which I will get to, but he was always generally exceptional on the mic and had to work his way up to main event status. To make this more simplified, I will list a bunch of the categories I think either guy excels in. Number one, mic skills. Number two, overall acting ability. Number three, in ring. Number four, putting others over. Number five, versatility, starting with mic skills. I feel as good as Roman has been on the mic since the Bloodline began. His acting skills as a whole, both backstage and in the ring, has been stellar, and his ability to speak on the mic has been better than average. But he does rely on his wise man, Paul Heyman, to do a lot of his talking, and he's consistently surrounded by everyone who's been in the Bloodline to share the load in terms of talking and selling matches and storylines. It's more of a team effort, but he gets the most credit as the person cast as the leading man. However, I feel like Cena's straight-up verbal skills on the mic from day one have always been top-notch, ever since he did the Vanilla Ice rapper gimmick, that is. He just has always seemed comfortable on the mic and has never really had to rely on anyone else to sell upcoming matches. He has always looked so comfortable on the mic, and his best promos are epic. Roman has certainly improved on the mic, but he relies on specific cues, like Acknowledge Me, and other people sharing the load. Cena also had cues and a shtick, but I feel he was more polished in other areas. Plus, we saw years ago in Cena and Roman's shoot promo in the middle of the ring on Raw how Cena schooled and embarrassed Roman and exposed Roman's weaknesses on the mic. Maybe some of that was Roman acting like he's terrible at promos, but I think it's obvious that WWE didn't trust Roman to speak in the middle of the ring that often during this time, and he didn't do many go-home promos, which top guys have traditionally done. He's definitely gotten better at the speaking for extended periods part, but again, I feel like surrounding himself with the rest of the Bloodline has meant he has never had to really rely on just himself to sell a match. His skills in acting and subtle facial expressions are just far more developed than his verbal skills, but he has still had some good back-and-forth promos here and there in recent years where he talks a little more like a real person. I'm going to stop there, John, and ask you about, you know, this is the overall question here. If you were starting a wrestling promotion and you could have, I think John gets to it at the end, if you could have peak Cena or peak Roman to start your promotion with, who would you choose? So just focusing on the mic skills that John laid out, I mean, do you agree with what he says? Who do you see stronger at their peak? You know, heel Roman now versus John Cena back in his day.
Yeah, he makes some really good points that I agree with, bringing up the reluctance of WWE to let Roman cut those go-home promos before a big pay-per-view match. That's telling. And I think Cena has surprised a lot of people with his acting in Hollywood. But I think in terms of acting in WWE, it's like that's been Roman's strength as opposed to cutting promos, if that makes sense. So, like, Cena is better at cutting promos in his prime, just standing in a ring or in the back or, you know, maybe going one-on-one, like the way Cena was able to more than hold his own against The Rock, which really surprised a lot of people. I think that's another good example. Whereas I think Roman's strength is more the interacting with, you know, the Bloodline and other people, as opposed to just standing there holding a mic and cutting, you know, a promo. So they both have their strengths. I'm not sure where that comes out, but if you're just talking strictly stand in the ring, holding a mic, cutting a promo, I'm going to give the edge to Cena.
And I think we also have to, you know, say that both are very good on the mic. I think it comes down to material. You know, we saw that Roman Reigns as a babyface had terrible material. And so his mic work suffered. Even though he was good, I mean, Roman Reigns just didn't learn how to cut a promo
right.
10 years into his career. I mean, it was the combination of the character, the heel turn, the you know, everything that went into this Bloodline storyline, the confidence that he had, which he didn't always have as a babyface cutting promos. So the mic ability has always been there. It's just the material has gotten so much better. And that's the same thing with John Cena. Like, John Cena has always been really good on the mic. His material was better as rapper John Cena, the underdog who's trying to get under your skin, than it was as John Cena, top star, who's appealing to the kids and, you know, the spray painting poopy on JBL's limo. I mean, that was he was still good at promos, but his material was not as good. So I do think we have to separate too out the mic ability and the material as well.
That's a good point.
So going back to John's email, his next category was overall acting ability. He says, I feel like Roman has been noticeably superior here. It doesn't help that Cena has frequently said over the years that he's just being himself and is really playing a character. It also doesn't help that Cena very rarely sold for his opponents in promos. It often smirked through most promos where it makes sense for him to be in a more serious or devastated or scared mood. Roman has been far superior and way more nuanced as a character in WWE than Cena ever was. But we can't really blame Cena because WWE didn't tell Bloodline-like storylines at the time he was on top. Roman's just more subtle and sells fantastically for his opponents and the other people in the Bloodline. I think subtle, John, is the key word there. There's nothing subtle about John Cena.
No.
He's as subtle as a sledgehammer. You often hear wrestling bookers and people throughout history say, you know, when you are in an arena, you need to play to the top of the rafters,
right?
So your expressions, your emotions, the way you emote has to be bigger because you're playing for the top row. And so for us watching on TV, it comes across as a little too big sometimes. But really, it's because the people are playing for the people there live. But I would agree. I think Cena's overacting is something he's known for in WWE now, and Roman is known for, if anything, underacting a little bit, probably.
Yeah. Well, and it's clouded. You know, we're trying to think of peak, but peak Cena has been a while. It's hard to separate what he's been doing now and, you know, the last few weeks. A lot of what he's been doing has been standing in the background and reacting to, like, what LA Knight says or whoever says.
Uh-huh.
And he's just so over the top and goofy and cartoonish with his facial expressions and his body language that it's like hard for me to look past the recency bias to try to remember.
Yeah.
And of course, obviously there have been times in the past. It's not like that's necessarily new. It seems worse to me now than it would have been, you know, 10 years ago, but maybe it was just as bad back then. And again, the material certainly plays a role. You know, Roman Reigns early on was really good at acting, but he never had to do much because you had Rollins and you had Ambrose to talk for the Shield. And he could just kind of come in and say one line, believe that, and look cool doing it. And that's all they expected of him, you know, as he became a breakout single star after the Shield, you know, things start to change. And then, as you said, what's the material? Is he asking, you know, as Poopy is bad, Suffer and Succotash is bad. You know, they both have had, you know, bad material to work
absolutely
with. Who makes that work? The difference to me, I think, is I have a feeling, and based some of this on what I've heard, I remember when Ambrose did the interview with Wade Keller after, you know, right after he left WWE, before, you know, in the early days, he talked about that and how Roman was not happy about that line. I think that's one of the differences. Like, I have a feeling John Cena was perfectly happy spray painting poopy on the limo. And never once questioned some of the more goofy things that he was scripted to do, whereas Roman, at least, I have the feeling his instincts were, this is bad, but they're paying me a lot of money, so I'm just going to do it and make it work as best as I can.
So the next is in-ring. They're, and this is from John now, they're both generally very good in the ring, but I feel like Cena easily has the better and larger list of 4- and 5-star matches. Some standouts: CM Punk Money in the Bank 2011, Daniel Bryan SummerSlam 2013, Brock Lesnar Extreme Rules 2012 and SummerSlam 2014, HBK WrestleMania 23 and their 60-minute match on Raw, AJ Styles SummerSlam 2016 and Royal Rumble 2017. He has also had fantastic matches with the likes of Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, Triple H, Edge, Randy Orton, Batista, and many others. Roman, on the other hand, has, I feel, had a few standout matches and others which I feel have been carried by his ability to tell stories verbally in the ring at a much slower pace since the Bloodline began. He has had two matches with Brock Lesnar, WrestleMania 31 and SummerSlam last year, which have been stellar, and he's had matches with AJ Styles and Seth, which have been very good, but I feel like his resume isn't really full of the same kind of high-caliber matches as Cena that have been the highlight of the night. His match with Cody was good as well, but I'm not sure I'd put it in the highest category. I want to give him credit, though. He is very good, but I don't think his level of in-ring work has resulted in as many epic matches over the years. Question: out of Cena and Roman, who do you feel has had more consistently higher quality of matches, and which are your favorite matches from each of them? I'll just say I think John nailed a lot of the ones from Cena. The one that I would put in there with that is Umaga at the Royal Rumble in the, I believe it was the Last Man Standing match. And for Roman Reigns, I'm not sure if it counts, but the Shield. He was in a lot of very good matches with the Shield. So, again, I'm not
sure
if that counts because,
six
you know,
mans.
Yeah, we're talking about Roman Reigns as a singles wrestler. And,
yeah.
You know, Cena is not a top-tier athlete. So he got a lot of that done with just, like, moxie, I think, and knowing what to do and when to do it, whereas I think Roman is more of a higher-caliber athlete than Cena was, having played professional football as Roman Reigns did, you know, in college football before that. So, you know, I think it is also what are they setting out to do? And as John pointed out, Roman Reigns, a lot of his matches are slower by design because, you know, first of all, a lot of them during his rise in the Bloodline took place during the pandemic. So you had the empty arenas. You had to have him carry the matches verbally as opposed to necessarily, you know, physically, which, you know, that obviously was a component of it as well. I do think John is selling Roman a little short. I know that those matches that he has, especially with a lot of the interference toward the end and the involvement of the Bloodline, the inevitable feeling that a lot of his title matches have, where, you know, it's not over till the Bloodline interferes. I think that, as well as the slow pace of it, can kind of turn people off. So maybe I'm a little higher on Roman's matches than Cena. Where do you fall on that comparison?
Yeah, I mean, I think, it's funny because Umaga was the one that popped into my head also, but you beat me to it. But, yeah, I'm probably higher on Roman over John, not John Cena, but John the emailer. I would give the nod to Cena. I think they're both really smart workers in understanding what they're trying to do and what they need to do to get the crowd to react the way they want to react. If that makes sense. Like Roman, as you pointed out, really understood in a way the empty arenas and took advantage of what a terrible situation that was. But with the verbal taunting and a lot of that stuff that wouldn't work as well, and he's carried it over, but it wouldn't, you know, it kind of started in that empty arena. Whereas Cena, you know, also a little more traditional kind of matches, maybe did Cena benefit, you know, when you list, oh, look at the great matches Cena has had with Shawn Michaels and CM Punk. You know, and Daniel Bryan and what, I mean, and we saw Roman have matches with Bryan also, but, you know, Roman was facing Undertaker at the end when Undertaker was not Undertaker anymore. You know, it's like the caliber of opponents, and again, Lesnar, Rollins, he's had good opponents, Cody. So I think, you know, Cena, I think, benefited from just maybe a higher caliber of opponents in some ways. Also, longer stretch. We talked about the Shield. You know, those matches, count, but they don't count in a way. And, well, if Roman was a single star longer than he had been, you know, he missed time with leukemia. He took time off because of the pandemic initially. So,
yeah.
And I think, so, and even though he's been around a long time, it's he doesn't have the body of work, but part of that is just longevity. But I do think Cena is, in general, a better worker. He does have a better body of work. Roman has benefited, you know, he mentioned his match against Lesnar at WrestleMania 31. I was lucky enough to be there in Levi Stadium for that. But that was such a big moment because of the Seth Rollins cash-in, which had nothing to do with Roman or Brock, for that matter. So that kind of clouds it. And then, as you said, a lot of these matches in the last couple years with this long streak have had some kind of interference, and you finally think, oh, you know, it's over. And then Solo Sikoa debuts at Clash of the Castle. And you finally think Cody's going to do it, but then here comes Solo again. But that's not Roman's fault. Like, the booking, like you said, you have to, with the mic work, you have to separate the actual skills, talking and acting ability from the material. Well, the booking is also something you have to, if you're just trying to, you know, analyze the performer and the in-ring worker, well, you got to look at the skills. You kind of have to separate it a little bit from the booking. And then you also have to say, like, God, that Lesnar-Roman Reigns SummerSlam match was a total blast. Mm-hmm. But it had a tractor picking up the ring and dumping Roman out of it. It had, you know, a failed cash-in in the middle of it because was it Tyson Fury knocked out Austin Theory? You know, it had – or was that a different one? I don't remember. Maybe, but you know what I mean. There were so many bells and whistles with that match. It was great. I loved it. But that doesn't necessarily point to, you know, to Roman's particular ability. But
right.
He carried his own in all of those matches. He did what he had to do in all those matches. And I think he's had a bit of a stigma, and Cena did too. I mean, you can't wrestle. Well, no, he can wrestle. Is he as good as Shawn Michaels or, you know, Ric Flair in their primes? Of course not. But he's good, and Roman's good. So,
yeah. So the next category, putting others over, back to John's email, he says, I think Cena takes the win here easily. If you think about it, Roman hasn't really put anyone over in WWE other than Jey Uso in the tag match at Money in the Bank. Firstly, he starts off in the red-hot and unbeatable faction, The Shield, that doesn't lose a match for nearly 2 years. After The Shield is over, he is pushed pretty much immediately as the face of WWE for years and almost never loses a match. Certainly not clean anyway, other than when he was punished for a month for violating WWE's wellness policy in 2016 and lost to Finn Balor and I think one or two other matches clean. After this, he's unbeaten for around 3 years until Jey Uso pins him at Money in the Bank in a tag match and doesn't drop his championship and has a reign lasting over 1,000 days. Not against him being champion, but I feel like an argument can be made for Cody winning at WrestleMania, Drew McIntyre winning at Clash at the Castle, and Jey winning at SummerSlam, just to see an evolution in Roman's character without the title and to see how he'd react to such a situation. Maybe Roman was against it, or maybe it was purely a WWE Triple H Vince call each time, but we haven't seen him without the title. He has generally never had to put anyone over unless it was a punishment or one time in a tag match to his cousin. I'm not sure losing to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 31 counts because it's Brock Lesnar who probably had more clout than Roman at the time anyway, and Lesnar also signed a new deal with WWE at the time.
Well, and it was Rollins 2-1, not Lesnar.
Yes. Meanwhile, Cena's had his weekly U.S. Open Challenge where he put over a lot of young guys, plus he put over Punk Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, all relatively cleanly in the middle of the ring at various points, letting Undertaker squash him at WrestleMania in Taker's own words, elevating Bray Wyatt and now LA Knight, including essentially being subservient to Knight and letting him have the spotlight, which is extremely rare for someone of Cena's stature, and arguably making The Miz the most relevant he's ever been, especially with their mixed tag feud spoofing/promoting Total Divas in 2017, heading into that year's WrestleMania. Maybe Roman starts putting over more people in the next chapter of his career, but I feel like Cena has him beat here, and it suggests, not to be too harsh on Roman, who may have done just what he was told, a certain level of selflessness in him as a person who's a wrestler, whereas Roman has not had extended periods of having to put others over 1, 2, 3. I think Roman's the equivalent of a lion bred in captivity in an ethical zoo or sanctuary that has a cushy life with more or less everything it could ever want and constantly kept fed and very few drawbacks compared to lions in the wild that have to fight for their lives every day and protect their pride. The Shield and Bloodline are his cub/lioness, and Vince has been his trainer/owner. Cena is more of the wild lion roaming the savannas and grasslands of Africa, doing the protecting and surviving, being 100% dedicated to WWE when he's around, whereas Roman has a family and other priorities and apparently tried to be a football player and furniture assembler prior to WWE. Question, do you think I'm being unfair on Roman not really putting others over and that Cena has a better track record here? Yes, I do think John's being a little unfair, especially in the context of who would I rather have as a top star in their prime. I don't think who they put over is germane to the conversation, because while, yes, as a top star, you have a certain amount of power, ultimately the decision is, for example, mine. If I'm building the promotion, Roman Reigns and John Cena are going to do what I'm told in terms of winning and losing. So that really the number of people they've put over or haven't put over doesn't really concern me when I'm trying to choose who has been who has put more people over. You know, we have the whole LOL Cena wins meme that's out there as well. So yeah, Cena's put a lot of guys over, but you know, there's that as well. And so I don't know. I get what he's saying, and I agree on a lot of points, especially when it comes to having someone else have defeated Roman Reigns, either at WrestleMania or Clash at the Castle, just to give him a different look within the storyline. But again, I'm not sure this particular point of his 5 points is relevant to the argument that is being made here of Cena versus Reigns as a top star.
Yeah, I fully agree. It's not really relevant to the conversation. And I will also say, yeah, he may not have put over anyone, but God, it's going to mean so much more when he does.
Yeah.
Than
putting someone over means more than just losing to them. You can
Correct.
Put someone over in a mic battle. You can put someone over just by the fact that you're interacting with them, the way you interact with them. You can put someone over by beating them. You know, there are notorious examples of wrestlers who have lost matches but didn't get the other guy over. So, you know, there's that aspect of it too.
Sure.
The final point for John, versatility. Both are reasonably versatile, and I feel like Roman has excelled tremendously in this Bloodline storyline, but his 5 years as a forced babyface showed what he wasn't really good at. He had his good moments, but he was generally inadequate as a lead babyface at this time. He'd maybe do a lot better now, though. Cena was generally playing himself and didn't have to play a variety of different roles, but I've always had a feeling he could be a tremendous heel, mainly because I believe he is talented enough to pull it off, and there have been odd glimpses of him escaping the Boy Scout flag-bearing good guy character. In the ring, he can do serious blood feuds with Edge or overcome all odds with Big Show or have classic matches with great athleticism and drama, but he can also do more silly goofball comedy and engage in less serious feuds based on reality TV shows like he did with The Miz. Roman hasn't shown more than a few different faces, but he has shown a lot of versatility and fantastic acting in the Bloodline. Question, if you had to pick either peak Cena or peak Roman for your own promotion, who would you pick? Keep up the great work. Thank you, John. All of this said, I guess I would pick John Cena just because I think they're even in a lot of ways, but Cena's ability to break through into the mainstream is just something we haven't seen from Roman Reigns yet. So it is a little bit unfair because you're seeing these two guys at very different points in their career, whereas if you could assess them both at the end of their careers, maybe it would be a lot more fair. But Cena has broken through into the mainstream in a way that Roman Reigns has not done yet. And there's a good and bad in that. If I'm looking to build around somebody at their peak, the good is that's a lot more attention that my company gets, and that's a lot more attention that I get via John Cena. But the bad is, you know, he could leave to do other projects and outgrow, so to speak, professional wrestling. But I think it's Cena for me.
Yeah, I think it's Cena too, but again, I don't think it's a huge gap. And if we're starting competing companies and you get Cena and I get Roman, I'm not going to be too down.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, confident that I can, you know, build around Roman in a way. And I do feel he's shown, just with a little bit at the end of the versatility, I do feel some of the Bloodline stuff has been really entertaining in a way that points to the fact that if he turns babyface, he turns babyface again, it'll be much better, assuming they play into this very similar kind of character with just some minor tweaks to make it more of a babyface character, as opposed to just trying to go back to a pure, you know, white meat babyface kind of character. The sarcastic, you know, some of the quips that he has, you know, for even just this past Friday, some of the interaction with Jimmy, you could see that almost in a babyface way, I think, because you don't really like Jimmy right now. So I could see them definitely turning him, you know, face, whether that's still as champion or after losing the title. But I think his next babyface run is going to be way better than his last one.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's learned a lot since then, and that's a lot that can apply to future babyface run. So
yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Our first call of the evening is DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. I was thinking about what they're kind of like going into more about changing Raw and everything. And now that, you know, I don't know, people are saying maybe Wednesday, but what would you guys really think if they really jumped on Wednesdays and had it out with, you know, the EAW? Like, that's kind of crazy, but, you know, Vince has done crazy stuff like this, and, you know, I don't know. What do you guys really think at the end of the day?
I guess you have to leave open the possibility, John, especially when you're still in the midst of negotiations as WWE is. You don't want to rule anything out. You don't want to box yourself in and say, no, we can only be on Wednesday, Monday nights, because that can kind of limit who you can negotiate with. It can kind of limit your ability to negotiate successfully. So I think you have to leave all options on the table. I just don't see it happening. You know, there's talk that Raw could go streaming or something like that. The only way I see them going on Wednesday nights is if they go streaming versus Dynamite on Wednesday nights. I just, you know, I think there's a quite a few people in WWE who would like to go against Dynamite to kind of push them further down. But, I mean, AEW isn't really threatening WWE's market share right now. I mean, they can both survive, and WWE is doing great financially. Like, they can both survive in the marketplace. I don't know. I just don't – I think that's a cutting off your nose to spite your face kind of move for WWE if they do that. So, you know, I understand why it's out there that they could move to Wednesdays. They could move to another night of the week, but – I would be surprised if that happened.
Yeah, I would too. I think it's become so synonymous with wrestling, Monday night, since 1993. And I know it wasn't always the case, but that's a long time. And Vince McMahon has, you know, had said at times he would blink and move Raw to Tuesday nights when they were losing badly to Nitro. But that was out of weakness. They're, you know, right now they can move in strength with this new TV deal. And I think they like having that instant reaction, you know, WrestleMania Sunday night. Tune in tomorrow night. Tune in Wednesday night. Doesn't quite, you know, there's always that post-PLE boost. And I don't think, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't know that Dynamite has had the same kind of ratings success with a boost coming out of their pay-per-views, which are more rare, although they're becoming less rare, unfortunately. But you know, that Monday night, tune in tomorrow night and find out what happened at SummerSlam. Find out what happened at, you know, Royal Rumble. Who won the Rumble? You know, and so I don't think they're going to want to change that. I think they like the travel schedule.
Yes.
You know, Friday, maybe Saturday house show, Sunday PLE or Saturday PLE, Monday. Whereas Wednesday is, you know, kind of in the middle of the week where they don't, you know, have something traditionally. I don't know if they are doing, you know, house shows Wednesday right now or not. But so I think there's just a lot of reasons to keep it on Monday night. Now, if they get an offer from Amazon to come to Prime for, you know, $1 billion over 5 years, but we want you to do it Wednesday, okay.
Yeah.
You may not be able to say no to that with all the other, you know, issues, but I'm guessing their preference for sure is to stay on Monday.
A lot of good points there. I agree. DJ, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
And my second thing is staying with WWE. LA Knight is so over right now. I feel like they have to give him a belt. They have to do something, give him the briefcase, something. But, you know, it was the same thing with A-Town, but, you know, in the very beginning. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, like you guys are saying in general, like, Roman should definitely put this guy over. You know, if they know what's in front of him, at least put him over because this is what the fans want. And, you know, it's just, you know, how sometimes the fans will take it over if they don't get their want. So at the end of the day, do you really feel like they're going to give him something, or do you feel like at the end of the day, if they're going to just push him down the ladder like they did A-Town, you know, in a couple months after they played their new toy?
I would be surprised if he beats Roman Reigns simply because the story is there for Cody or The Rock or whomever. The story isn't really necessarily about LA Knight getting the victory. I think you can still, you know, and I'm actually surprised they've gone this quickly to Roman versus LA Knight, because I feel like you could have done LA Knight in a secondary title match and give him a title there and kind of appease the fans that way. Whereas you're tempting fate a little bit by putting him in there with Roman if you're going to have him lose and have the crowd potentially, you know, have a backlash of some kind. Whereas I think if you gave him a secondary title, you wouldn't see that backlash. You wouldn't see that demand necessarily for him to face Roman Reigns. So I would be surprised, just because I don't think you throw away 3 years of buildup to have someone as a champion to make the fans happy over the new hot thing. But I do agree that they have to give him something meaningful to do, and they have to keep him doing something meaningful so long as the crowd reacts positively to him. John, what do you think? I mean, am I out to lunch here? Does he have a real shot at beating Roman for the title?
No, he doesn't have any shot. But I think, to me, the one-on-one match for the world title against Roman is the something. You know, you say, well, we got to give him something. That's the something. There are not a lot of people getting title matches. I mean, Roman hasn't had any match in a few months, and he hasn't had a title match since WrestleMania. So, you know, this is – it's that crown jewel, which – part of me says that's a bigger issue, like, hey, or a bigger deal, excuse me. Like, not only is he getting a title match, he's getting a crown jewel. Part of me says, well, maybe that's not as big a deal. I'm not really sure how I feel about that. But
you won't have the if Reigns wins, we riot fans there, you know. So that's a safe place you can have LA Knight lose and not worry about a backlash, at least immediately.
Right, and I agree with DJ that, you know, you want to capitalize on not just the live reactions, but the merchandise sales what I've read have been really high for him. Obviously, the fans are behind him, and you don't want to, you know, upset those fans. But I also feel like he's above, you know, where, like, Austin Theory was. So I think you have to have him lose. We just talked about, you know, Roman can put people over without losing in a way. How does he lose? How does the match go? Book it in a way that advances LA Knight and then move him on to something else meaningful. There's a lot that you can do. Have him be in a position in January where you could legitimately see him as a Royal Rumble winner. You know, there's stories you can tell. I'm always begging WWE, don't just have one or two obvious winners for the Rumble. You can, you know, I think they can tell a story where you could see them giving that title, or excuse me, that Rumble win to Knight. Not that he would win, but you make him a big part of the Rumble where he gets that push, and you could see him potentially winning to get that rematch against Roman. There's a lot you can do to push him, to give him an elevated. Right now, you know, the U.S. title, I don't know. Does it mean anything? I don't know. Like, you could always put the U.S. title on him. I'm not sure how much of a boost that really would be, unfortunately. But
yeah.
Unlike the Intercontinental title, which they have done an amazing job with rehabbing, but I don't feel they've done that with the U.S. title just yet.
Yeah. All right, DJ, back to your final question or comment for us tonight.
Thing is EAW going into, it's a two-part question, it's going into like the two-part snake, going into the scrum and Adam saying all this stuff, if you go back, he said exactly what CM Punk said, exactly 100%. At the end of the day, you know, he's not there just to help people. He needs to do, that's what CM Punk did. He tried to help people and he didn't, you know, exceed. So I feel like if Adam just focused on wrestling, then not worried about that, and just worried about, you know, calling the matches.
DJ, there are three Adams in AEW. I know you're talking about Adam Copeland.
Sorry.
But you might want to choose to be a little more specific.
Sorry, and so I just into that. This is like, you know, I don't know if he's just, you know, saying stuff or he just wants to be a good wrestler, but it's like going into the other part of my question. It's like, you know, MJF, he doesn't want to be a babyface. He wants to, you know, you can tell in his face and his reactions, he wants to be that heel. And they put him in a situation that he doesn't want to be in. And, you know, you can tell he doesn't really want to put this guy over because he wants to be the main heel. You know what I mean? Is this kind of crazy? Is that like two different people are saying two different things? And I just hope that, you know, Tony knows what he's, you know, get into backing people in the corner like this.
Yeah, I think Edge truly does want to help out, and I think CM Punk did too. You know, he had a very different way of going about it, but, you know, from the reports, even, you know, from people who were not necessarily Punk fans, you know, Punk tried to make Collision kind of in his own image, and he was willing to help the people who were on Collision and things like that. So I believe, you know, Adam Copeland, when he says that, you know, MJF, does he not want to be heel? I don't know. He's doing a pretty good job of not being a heel right now. So, you know, maybe they're going to run with that for a little while. I don't know. John, any thoughts on either of those points?
Well, I think there's a long history of wrestlers who either really want to only be one or the other. And sometimes they play that role forever in a day, and sometimes they go back and forth. And there's a lot of wrestlers who were really, really good at one and not so good at the other. And some wrestlers who could play both, to their credit. And I'm thinking of like a Randy Orton. Like Orton, I think, my recollection is he has kind of been on the record as saying he didn't want to play babyface. But man, he was fun with Matt Riddle, as you know, in a way that just, we all were saying, okay, but when is the RKO coming? And obviously, who knows what would have happened if he hadn't had the back injury. But they lasted as a team, I think, way longer than anyone thought. And a lot of it was because we know Randy wants to go back and play heel again. I think Charlotte is probably similar. Charlotte Flair is clearly better as a heel, and I think she wants to play heel, but right now they want her to play babyface, and I don't understand it. So there's a lot of history in wrestling where you know, wrestlers are unfortunately miscast, or, you know, they're not allowed to do. But I don't think also they should just blanket, if MJF wants to be a heel, if the better thing for him is to be a babyface, then he just needs to be a babyface. It's not just about what he wants. It's ultimately, to go back to one of our favorite all-time WWE phrases, it's what's best for business. And if it's best for business for him to be playing a babyface, now, again, going back to our Roman Cena discussion, what's the material for MJF as a babyface? His material with Adam Cole has been atrocious as far as I'm concerned. I thought he was better just kind of cutting a promo, more serious promo this past week. You know, we talked about the anti-Semitism part, but the rest, like the promo that led up to that, I thought was stronger for MJF. So if they want him to be that babyface and the fans want to cheer for him, sometimes you have to, like with LA Knight, you got to go with what the fans want. And right now it seems like the fans, you know, he's their, what is it? He's their devil, whatever that phrase is, you know, like they want him to be it. And I think a part of it is he's not an AEW, excuse me, he's not a WWE guy. He's not a New Japan guy. You know, like Kenny Omega was. I mean, he is an AEW guy. Obviously, you know, he was in Independence and stuff. But on a national level, he is, like, you know, he is the pillar, let's be honest. And so fans are going to rally behind him for that reason. He's also super talented. So, you know, fans are going to rally behind him because of that. And even when he's trying to be a heel, he's often entertaining in a fun way. So if he'd rather play the heel, maybe he just needs to suck it up and say, okay, I'd rather do that, but I'm going to do this to the best of my ability.
Yeah. All right, DJ, thanks for the phone call this week.
We'll see you next week.
All right. Before we get to our next email, John, I want to talk a little bit about Fastlane, emphasis on little, because if you read my roundtable review in the column that just came, or the Torch newsletter that just came out this week. It was, you know, it was a slight, I guess, thumbs up, more thumbs in the middle, just because, and I feel like this is the bottom for WWE PLEs these days, which is actually a great place to be, where it's like, yeah, it was good, but it didn't feel really important. You know, they tried to put some things on the show, you know, Carlito and things like that, that made it feel more important than just an episode of Raw or just an episode of SmackDown. But there wasn't really a lot on the show to even talk about coming out of it. You know, you had the second Nakamura-Rollins match, which was good, but again, you know, your problem is Nakamura, who just for so long was treated like a nobody in WWE, and now all of a sudden you want people to treat him as a real threat to Seth Rollins' title, and WWE has done a nice job of trying to build them up, but it just didn't feel as epic as I think the company was trying to make it. Any Fastlane thoughts from you?
I think, yeah, just perfectly fine. It's kind of the way it was fine. There wasn't. I like the fact that it was like 2 hours and 45 minutes. it didn't overstay its welcome. The tag title match that started it with Cody and Jay versus Balor and Priest, I thought was probably the best match of the night. The LWO stuff, kind of just there, didn't do much for me. I mean, Carlito was always an amusing character, but it's not like I've been sitting here going ever since they signed him reportedly a few months ago, been, oh, I can't wait for Carlito to debut. I don't care that much. I thought the women's triple threat was pretty good, you know, a good match for sure. The Cena, LA Knight, Jimmy Uso, Solo Sikoa was okay. It just seemed like a really, really long beatdown of Cena, like overly long. It felt more like a match you could get on any SmackDown. And then the Rollins-Nakamura match was certainly good. I'm not a huge fan of the Last Man Standing format, but I think they played into it well. I think the story that they played going into it enhanced the match because of the emphasis on Rollins' back injury, and the presentation of Nakamura, as has been said, has been top-notch, but it's probably a little too little too late on that to make him actually seem like a legitimate threat. And I had argued in my Raw Hits and Misses, I kind of said, I'm not, like, that high on Rollins as the champion. Give the title to Nakamura because, for one thing, like, it sells the idea that you never know. You know, they might do that. And I thought the presentation of his character with the subtitles and the way he's been presented more serious, more sinister, has been so strong, I wouldn't mind seeing him get a short run with the title. So I was advocating for that, even if he had been, you know, pretty cold before, you know, 6 weeks ago or 2 months ago, whatever it was.
Yeah, I agree. I would not have been against that. It's just, you know, again, that they tried to make it feel epic and it just didn't, it didn't get there. And so that's part of the problem, I think. But yeah, it was a fine pay-per-view. And like you said, you know, when I got back and I sat down Sunday to watch it, and I saw that it was less than 3 hours, I'm like, ah, yes, like I can get through this in an afternoon. This is fantastic. Like, I don't have to watch an hour here and an hour there and all this kind of stuff. So that was a thing of beauty. I really appreciated that. And if it is going to be like a show that you just don't have something epic on it, don't try to make it epic in terms of length. Like, don't, you know, you don't have to have them that long.
Right. So,
yeah. Quick three-pack of questions from Azan, who sent an email to our mailbag this week. He said, hello, Greg and John. Question number one, what is your take on Logan Paul possibly winning the U.S. belt at Crown Jewel, and could that lead to an L.A. Knight and Paul feud in the future? So I saw on social media that Paul had called out Rey Mysterio after his most recent bout. So I assume that's going to happen, and then Azan is sort of booking it out to LA Knight versus Paul for the U.S. title. So, you know, part of what I said about giving Knight a secondary title, I mean, here's your chance to do it. You know, have Logan Paul beat Rey Mysterio, have Knight and Paul go at it, which I think would be very entertaining from a mic work standpoint. It's just all about, at this point, you know, what is Logan Paul's schedule like? Is he willing to put in that time that's required of someone who is champion to put in?
Well, he'll be there as frequently as Roman has. I do like the idea, and I saw the post. I don't know, was it a fight, was it a match, whatever it was, I saw the post comment with he
that's,
with him
that's why
out
I carefully used the word bout because I think that covered whatever it was.
that's fair. So yeah, I saw that, and I would be perfectly fine with Paul. Well, first of all, I think Paul and Mysterio should be very good, and I would be perfectly fine with him winning the title. I just said, you know, that they haven't really done a lot to make it. You know, and I like Mysterio, obviously, as a champion. The only thing that may hold them back is, are they going to angle for a Mysterio Escobar feud, some kind of breakup or split in the LWO, if that's their plan. But if not, then I'm on board for that, and I agree wholeheartedly with the idea of an LA Knight Logan Paul. God, the obnoxiousness meter. Get Pat McAfee to do a sit down in the ring with the two of them. the obnoxiousness will just blew the roof off the building, but it would be a lot of fun.
Question number two, what are your thoughts on the weird deal with MJF and Max Caster going on right now? So we had some social media interplay between these two. We had Caster coming up. I don't know if it was backstage after a pay-per-view trying to cheer up MJF, and then it's been kind of a constant thread throughout. So, John, I'm not sure if you've caught all the interactions, but it's kind of another tentacle to MJF Adam Cole. I don't know if it's meant to be like something that will eventually tease dissension between MJF and Adam Cole. I don't know if it's just something that's born out of social media and a running gag. I'm not really sure what the meaning is behind it, if there is any. I mean, to me, it could play as an important role in the MJF Cole story, just as likely as it could be that it's dropped tomorrow and they never discuss it again. So I guess I just don't have a really good feel for its purpose quite yet.
Yeah, it's weird. I've seen a little bit of it. It's definitely weird. It feels out of place. And I just want to see MJF as a world champion in a much more serious presentation. And I just complimented that he finally had a more serious promo on Dynamite. But then, of course, the next thing we see is him trying to call Adam Cole, who's stuck forever on Roddy's house helping him mow the lawn. I mean, and then you get, you know, on Collision or whenever the next one was, you get the strange interaction with him, and it's just, it's weird, and it just feels like, why are we doing this with our world champion?
I kind of hope it does play into something bigger, because I like the subtle teases of something more, so I am kind of hoping it is more meaningful. And the third question from Azan, are there any thoughts on Bound for Glory next weekend? And last night's MLW, especially how Rocky Romero has been one major players behind the scenes in the business. Thank you, Azan. Rocky Romero won the MLW middleweight title, so he is a double champion as well. I'm not sure what to make of it. Guys go in and out of MLW so much, it's hard to say. I know MLW has opened doors to some other promotions that they're working with. They're always on the verge of that big TV deal that never seems to come, so I kind of, they're in my background view. I kind of know peripherally what goes on with them, but I can't give any more insight into that. But we'll talk about Bound for Glory in just a second. John, any thoughts on either of those? I'm not sure what your viewing habits, or even, you know, how closely you pay attention to Impact or MLW.
I don't pay much attention to either. I have, I'm trying to remember when it was. At some point, you know, I started to hear more and more about MLW, and I said, okay, I need to check this out. So I watched a few of their weekly shows. I mean, it's been over a year. I don't even remember when. And they were fine. I liked them well enough, but I just kind of felt, I watch too much wrestling. Do I really need to be adding another, you know, hour weekly show? So after, I think I only watched two or three. So I'm definitely not, you know, and I'll read stuff about it or hear stuff on social media about it, but it's not in my circle. And, you know, Rocky Romero, he's going to appear on AEW, and he'll have 17 titles from other promotions, and he'll be facing somebody from Mexico who's got 17 titles from other promotions. And at the same time, I'm supposed to care about a battle royal over a diamond ring. It's just, at some point, it gets kind of tough with all the interpromotional stuff, and I know a lot of people love it, but for me, it makes it harder to follow when there's already, you know, 100 people on your roster, and now I have to learn, you know, New
sure.
Japan and MLW and Impact and CMLL and ROH's and AAA's rosters to get all that's going on. Yeah.
So Bound for Glory is Saturday, and their lineup looks like this. Alex Shelley versus Josh Alexander for the Impact title. Will Ospreay versus Speedball Mike Bailey. Chris Sabin puts his X Division title on the line against Kenta. Trinity takes on Mickie James for the Knockouts Championship. There will be a 20-person Call Your Shot Gauntlet Battle Royal. The Rascals take on Chris Bay and Ace Austin in a tag title match. Killer Kelly and Masha Slamovich against Deonna Purrazzo and Tasha Steelz in a Knockouts tag title match. PCO versus Rhino versus Steve Macklin versus Moose in a Monsters Ball match. So, you know, it is a strong lineup from an in-ring point of view. They've got some imports here in Will Ospreay and Kenta who will come in, and they'll do some good work here. So, you know, pretty strong lineup for Bound for Glory, I think. And we've got coming up for WWE, Crown Jewel is November 4th and Survivor Series November 25th. So they got two PLEs in the month of November. Halloween Havoc is NXT's next big event, and that will be a two-night event over two episodes of television, October 24th and October 31st. And then AEW's next pay-per-view is November 18th with Full Gear. So a lot still on our plate over the next month or so, John. I want to thank you for coming on Wrestling Night in America tonight to talk about it all. Before I let you go, tell fans where they can find you on social media and what you do for the Torch.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at John, J-O-N, Mazzera, M-E-Z-Z-E-R-A. And I like to interact. I don't necessarily start interactions, but I like to respond. And you can read my stuff. I do the Raw hits and misses every week for pwtorch.com, just taking a look at that week's Raw and saying, kind of breaking down segment by segment, here's the good stuff, here's the bad stuff. Thankfully, there's been more good than bad recently. That's not always been the case, but I've been enjoying doing the work better lately than I have at other times. So that usually comes out about Wednesday because I'm generally a little behind on my television viewing. So look for that Wednesday or Thursday. It's part of a great lineup we have of at the Torch of hits and misses specialists for Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and all the AEW shows. And I don't even know, are there probably do them for Impact too? So probably doing for PLEs also. So it's a fun little fraternity to be part of.
Absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me again this week, and we'll have you on again soon.
Thank you, Greg. It's always a blast.
Absolutely. So we are here each and every Sunday night. We'll be here again next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, and we will be talking the fallout from Bound for Glory. We'll have one of our Impact experts here breaking down Bound for Glory with me next week. So if you're an Impact fan and you feel like that show doesn't get covered enough on the Torch or here on Wrestling Night in America, you're going to want to tune in next week. Call us up, 515-605-9345, or send us an email after you watch Bound for Glory. We love to get emails, love to discuss them on the show, wnialivecast@gmail.com. You can find me on social media at Greg M. Parks. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and thank you for joining us, and hope you'll tune in next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.